Because, and I say it again, Ukraine's future is our future. What happens in the weeks and months ahead is pivotal for the security of the United Kingdom and all our allies across NATO and beyond. So we are determined to act now, to dial up the pressure on Putin and finally bring him to the negotiating table in good faith. Thank you. Now let me hand over to my friend Vladimir.
Thank you so much, Colonel. The result of this meeting, what can I say? And we'll not go to details. So the result of this meeting, we have sanctions on Russian energy. We don't have meeting in Hungary without Ukraine. And we have not yet Tomahawks. That's it. This is the result. I think not bad. We will see. I don't know, really. Each day brings something. I don't know. Maybe tomorrow, I don't know. We will have Tomahawks. I don't know. I don't know. Thank you so much.
This is my video update on this Saturday afternoon, October the 25th, coming to you from Nicosia, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news. And let's start things off with the Coalition of the Willing meeting that took place in London. And Zelensky, he met with King Charles before meeting with the all-powerful Coalition of the Willing. He met with the King and he inspected the British troops, the guards. He inspected the guards. Zelensky walking in front of King Charles as he inspects the British Royal Guards. King Charles walking behind Emperor Zelensky. And where was Podolyak in all of this? Where was Podolyak? Get Podolyak! These soldiers have a big, big long hat. Makes them look very tall. Maybe I buy one. What do you think, Podolyak? I don't know, Mr. President. I think your shoes give you enough lift. Anyway. He met with King Charles. Very embarrassing for the king to be walking behind the Green Goblin, who was wearing all black, the Dark Knight, the Black Adder. Anyway, Zelensky then met with Keir Starmer, with 008. And man, Keir Starmer. Keir Starmer. Oh, boy. So it looks like Keir Starmer got some Ukraine supporters, some very, very diehard Ukraine supporters with the flags, with the Ukraine flags. And he placed them in the interior courtyard. Yeah, the interior courtyard of the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, which is closed off to the general public, right? So this was staged. So all these people were brought into the interior courtyard with their flags, and they were cheering as Starmer and Zelensky greeted them. Perhaps the only people that cheer Keir Starmer on in the UK, and they were probably paid to do it. That would be my guess. But Craig Murray, he posted on X, "This is the interior courtyard of the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. I worked there for 2 decades, completely blocked off from the public. Talk about staged." Yeah, that's pretty pathetic, man, from Keir Starmer. That's pretty sad. Pretty sad from 008. What are you going to do when you have an approval rating of 1%? You have to bring people in to the interior courtyard, right? That's the only way you're going to get someone to applaud you, when you have an approval rating of 1% or negative 1%. I think I'm being too generous to Keir Starmer. So they had their meeting. They had their Coalition of the Willing meeting. Man, the Coalition of the Willing. just doesn't go away, does it? It does not go away. The coalition of the willing goes away for a little bit, then it comes back, then it goes away for a little bit, then it comes back. Well, it's back. It's back, and it's bigger and badder than ever. The coalition of the willing. Macron actually said that the coalition of the willing is experiencing a turning point, right? It's a turning point for the coalition of the willing, said Macron, who wasn't there. He wasn't present. I believe he attended via video. But because they finally got Trump on the escalation escalator, and there's no coming down from the escalation escalator once you're on it, U.S. President Trump, because Trump has put sanctions on Russia, so he's now on the escalation escalator, and he is riding that sucker all the way to a big defeat in Project Ukraine, and it's going to be all blamed on Trump. Trump is going to take the L for Project Ukraine. But anyway, Macron said that getting Trump to place those sanctions is a turning point, a big turning point, for the coalition of the losers, sorry, of the willing, my mistake. Anyway, they had the meeting, and Keir Starmer, always the effective strategist, geopolitical strategist that he is, he has come up with a 5-point plan for victory. Not a 5-point piss plan, not a 12-point piss plan. We got the 12-point piss plan a couple of days ago. Now Starmer has introduced a 5-point plan for strengthening Ukraine, for a victory for Ukraine. And this 5-point peace plan, as Zelensky would say, it involves point number one, ramping up sanctions on Russia. And Keir Starmer said that that the main goal now is to keep Trump placing them sanctions, keep them on that sanctions escalator, but also place sanctions on other countries that are working with Russia, secondary sanctions. Now the goal is to ramp up secondary sanctions against India and China. Actually, Starmer said, talking about secondary sanctions and Trump's sanctions on the U.S. sanctions on Lukoil and Rosneft, let's see, Starmer said that, actually he pledged, he didn't even say, he pledged to take Russian oil and gas off the global market. And when Starmer pledges something, you can take it to the bank, man. That's how good Starmer is. That's how effective Starmer is. No match for Putin and Russia. No match against the most boring man in politics, 008, Keir Starmer. Europeans vowed to choke Russian oil sector after Trump sanctions. Ukraine's leader capped a week of dramatic escalation by solidifying Europe's unified front. This is coming from Politico. Starmer pledging to choke off Russian oil and gas from the global markets. So that's point number one of Starmer's plan. Point number two is to force Russia to pay reparations, right? The reparations loan to get that 140 billion or whatever's left in Euroclear, to get that 140 billion to Zelensky. And then, because this is in the form of, as Ursula calls it, a reparations loan, to then get Russia to pay reparations to Ukraine. So that's point number two. Point number three is to keep up air defense support. And Starmer announced 5,000 missiles from the UK to Ukraine. I believe they have, according to Starmer, 140 missiles already ahead of schedule and soon to be delivered to the Green Goblin. 5,000 lightweight missiles will be delivered, according to Keir Starmer. And that was point number four. And point number five. Actually, point number four, there's something else about point number four that I'm forgetting. Oh, yeah, he also said that that negotiations for Tomahawks are underway. He's still speaking with the United States, with Trump, and they're discussing the Tomahawks. So that's developing, the Tomahawks, according to Keir Starmer. And I imagine that Trump is going to fold. I don't imagine. I'm pretty sure that Trump will fold to Tomahawk missiles. And if it's not Tomahawk missiles, it'll be some other long-range missile, Taurus missiles, as I've been saying for the past couple of months, which need the U.S.'s approval because they use U.S. component parts. And, of course, all the long-range missiles, whatever gets delivered to Project Ukraine, all the long-range missiles need U.S. Targeting and satellite data. So, effectively, whatever long-range missile is given to Project Ukraine and fired into Russia, we're talking about a U.S. strike into Russia, deep into Russia. So that's point number four. So air defense missiles, as well as convincing Trump to give up the ghost, to give up the Tomahawks. And then we get to point number five in Keir Starmer's plan, which is security guarantees and boots on the ground. Yep, so we're back at security guarantees. Back to security guarantees, UK boots on the ground, and French boots on the ground. Macron actually said that in 2026, France will be ready to send its military into Ukraine. It just needs the green light, the go-ahead, the security guarantees, the United States' approval and backstop, and then France is ready to enter Ukraine. And Keir Starmer said that the UK is ready to enter Ukraine, and they've drawn up all the plans, and they're continuing to solidify those plans. But that is point number five, security guarantees. And then France and the UK and other countries entering Ukraine with the approval and the backstop of the United States. So that's the coalition of the willing meeting, shared, hosted by Keir Starmer and Keir Starmer's five-point plan for victory. Zelensky told the coalition of the willing as they were meeting at this, around this very, very big table. Zelensky at the head of the table with Starmer there and Mette Frederiksen there, and Rutte was also there. And Zelensky said that it's not enough to just sanction Rosneft and Lukoil. Zelensky said that all Russian companies, energy companies, oil companies must be blocked. That was Zelensky's latest order and demands of the coalition of the willing. And by the way, NATO CEO Mark Rutte, a man who is known for his honesty and integrity, a man who never, ever lies, Mark Rutte, he said that Putin is running out of money, he is running out of troops, and he's running out of ideas. Looks like Putin's in trouble. And once again, Rutte, he is known for his honesty. So when he says that Russia is running out of money and that they're running out of troops and they're also running out of ideas, they have no more ideas. There's no more ideas for Putin, no more ideas left, then you know that victory for Ukraine is very, very close. Very close indeed. The sidekick of Ursula Vanderpirate, Mr. Costa, he posted on X, at today's Coalition of the Willing meeting, I recalled the main message of EUCO. EU is committed to ensuring that Ukraine's financial needs are covered for the next 2 years. EU adopted the 19 sanctions package. EU is strengthening measures to disrupt Russia's shadow fleet. Together with our partners, we are stepping up our support to Ukraine. Costa's taking a prominent role now in supporting Zelensky. Yeah? Very interesting. It seems as if Ursula has taken a little bit of a backseat, just a little bit, not much, but just a little bit of a backseat, maybe because of all her disappearing message scandals that she has going on. And Gosta has stepped up, man. And Gosta's tough. If you thought Ursula was tough, if you thought Vanderpirate was tough, man, Gosta's tough, man. He is tough. He's gonna be a challenge for Russia, and an incredible ally for Zelensky to have. Gosta, to have next to him, Gosta is now stepping up to support Zelensky. And did you hear what Gosta? Did you listen to what I read about what Gosta posted on X? The EU has committed to financially supporting Ukraine for 2 years. This is above and beyond the $140 billion. Reparations loan that they're going to seize from Euroclear in Belgium eventually by December, most likely. Anyway, 2 years. The European Union is on the hook to finance the Green Goblin. Yep. So Bloomberg is reporting that the man who sabotaged the Budapest summit is none other than, take a guess, take a wild guess who it is. Not Kellogg. Nope, not Kellogg. Not Lindsey Graham. Not Lindsey Graham. Marco Rubio. This is according to Bloomberg. Trump's sudden shift on Putin spurred by Russia critic Rubio. And according to Bloomberg, Rubio, he convinced Trump to call off any diplomacy rapprochement with Russia. Rubio believed, according to Bloomberg sources, that the United States was not being hard enough on Russia, that Russia was not making any concessions and was evading or avoiding the ceasefire, right? The capitulation ceasefire. And they would not agree to capitulate. And so Rubio convinced Trump to just call everything off in Budapest. Ah, Marco Rubio. Once a neocon, always a neocon. And it's Rubio that is also spearheading the soon-to-be conflict with Venezuela. I'll get to that in a minute. Kirill Dmitriev. He is in the United States. He gave an interview to CNN. He's going to be meeting, I believe, with Witkoff. And he says that there's still hope for diplomacy and for a solution between the United States and Russia. Okay, that's Dmitriev, who is on the business side of things. And he is saying that all is not lost. There's still a chance for the U.S. and for Russia to find a solution and to do business. I would have to respectfully disagree with Dmitriev, because Trump is on that escalator. There's no way down, man. That's just the way I'm seeing it. Once you place those sanctions, and then when Trump gives the long-range missiles, the green light for the long-range missile strikes, there's no way off that escalator. But I believe I read that this trip was planned before Rubio got Trump to, allegedly, Rubio got Trump to cancel the Budapest summit. So this was already in the works, and I imagine both sides just said, you know what, let's keep the door open. At least let's talk on a business level. Witkoff with Dmitriev and keep that door cracked just a little bit open for diplomacy, just in case, right? A hedge for the Trump White House as it moves towards a big defeat in Ukraine. Orban betrayed not once, but twice. That's right. A lot of people took issue with the video that we did on the Duran, or with the video that I made on this channel, where I said that the Trump White House, they betrayed Orban by canceling the Budapest summit. Looks like that Orban himself has realized that he has been betrayed. And he has also been betrayed with the sanctions on Rosneft and Lukoil. And Orban is saying as much. He's not saying that the United States betrayed him or that Trump betrayed him, but Orban is admitting that these sanctions are going to hurt Hungary, and they pose a challenge for Hungary. Hungary's Orban vows to circumvent U.S. sanctions on Russian oil titans. The battle is not over yet, Hungarian Prime Minister says, teeing up a possible fight with the White House. There are indeed sanctions in place against certain Russian oil companies, he told the radio program Good Morning Hungary. I started the week by consulting with MOL executives several times, and we are working on how to circumvent these sanctions, Orban said, referring to Hungary's MOL energy company. Anyone who wants utility price reductions must defend Hungary's right to buy oil and gas from Russia, he added. Yeah, he's going to have to get an exemption. Germany's going to get an exemption. At least Merz is confident that Germany is going to get an exemption for their Rosneft subsidiary refinery. India's not going to get any exemptions, right? Isn't that interesting how the sanctions work? India's going to get no exemptions for refining Russian oil. And they're looking over the contracts right now, and they'll find a way to circumvent everything. I have no doubt about it that they're going to find a way to circumvent everything. Oil is not just going to sit there. It's not going to sit there. There is demand. There's always demand for oil. There's always buyers for oil. And this oil will get sold one way or another. But right now, the Indian refineries, they're looking over the contracts that they have in place, and they're thinking about how to circumvent things. And Hungary, Orban, is thinking about how to circumvent things. He's going to probably have to go to Trump and ask for an exemption in much the same way that Merz is asking for an exemption. But these sanctions on Russian oil, they really put Orban in a really bad position. And he runs the risk of increasing gas prices as he heads into an election over the next year. This could really hurt him as he heads towards an election. And his opposition, Peter Magyar, he has a lot of support. I think he's polling at 25 to 30%, or maybe even 35%. I mean, he has support. He's supported by Ursula and the globalists. Full support from the globalists and from Ursula. So Trump really put Orban in a very, very difficult position. Interesting about Trump, huh? The people who support him, he betrays. The people who despise him, he accommodates, right? He wants to be friends with. He wants to please the people who despise him, and he betrays the people that support him. Very bizarre from Trump, but that's the way he was in his first term as well, right? Think about John Bolton and all the neocons that he put in his administration during his first term. That ended up betraying him again. They constantly betrayed him, but he kept on appointing them. And then you have all the neocons that he appointed in his current administration, huh? So, what else? What else? Venezuela. Let's get to Venezuela, which really is the big story. We are heading towards a conflict in Venezuela. Not WMDs, not Iraq WMDs. Now we are talking about Maduro, Venezuelan drugs, narco terrorism and stuff like that, right? Same basic narrative concept, same playbook. They've just swapped out WMDs with drugs and narco terrorism and stuff like that. But it's essentially the same thing. And people are falling for it, unfortunately. Not everybody, but there is a good part of the world, let's say, that is supporting a possible operation against Venezuela. I'll say this: there's a good part of the U.S. Congress that is supporting an operation against Venezuela, and actually, Semaphore, the publication Semaphore, actually writes about it. They posted an article with the title, "It's Important to Liberate Venezuela, Congressional Republicans Cheer Trump's Offensive." And in this article, Semaphore talks about how there is a slight resistance in Congress But for the most part, both parties, left and right, support some sort of operation against Maduro. And even if the Democrats voice opposition against Trump, they're just playing politics, according to Semaphore. They really support an operation against Venezuela. They'll play some politics and pretend to oppose Trump, but they're not going to block Trump if he decides to move forward with an operation against Venezuela. Here is what Semaphore writes. Domestic and international data shows Venezuela is not active in fentanyl traffic, with some cocaine movement. The vast majority of fentanyl is smuggled into the U.S. via land posts and typically by U.S. citizens. Still, with few exceptions, most Republicans in Congress are content to let Trump go after what he says are narco-terrorists, drug dealers trying to poison the U.S. They see a public aligned with them against drugs and little potential for blowback, either politically or militarily. So the politicians, they're not afraid of any type of voter blowback as you head into midterms, so they're not worried about that. They feel like the drug narrative has support, has enough support from the American voter, and they're going to support Trump. Even though Semaphore, in this article, they actually state that data shows Venezuela is not active in fentanyl traffic. Some cocaine movement, but the vast majority is smuggled into the U.S. via land ports and typically by U.S. citizens. Semaphore actually writes that. That's the paragraph right above where they say that the politicians, they feel like they're not going to lose much political capital, if any, if they support Trump in an operation against Venezuela. Semaphore goes on to say that Trump appeared to give the green light for more lawmaker briefings on Thursday, telling reporters that I don't think they'll have a problem with it. But a person close to the White House told Semaphore that Trump will coordinate with Congress when Maduro's corpse is in U.S. custody. This is according to their sources. Trump has already coordinated with Congress, the Trump White House, and told them that Maduro's corpse will be in U.S. custody. This is the same exact playbook as Iraq and Saddam. Same thing. Just not WMDs. This time we're talking about drugs. And Rubio is pushing a lot of this. Rubio is spearheading most of this. Secretary of State Marco Rubio. The New York Times article that I talked about a couple of weeks ago, which claimed that Maduro told the United States that he's willing to give their energy companies, their oil companies, preferential treatment. He's ready to move away from Iran, China, Russia, as long as the United States calls off some sort of military operation. And the New York Times claims it was Rubio who said no. He said, no, we don't care what you give us. Maduro, I want you gone. I want regime change. Remember that article? I talked about that when I was in Moscow. The United States has deployed the Gerald Ford carrier group, the Ford carrier group, to the region. According to the New York Times, U.S. deploys aircraft carrier to Latin America, a major escalation. The Trump administration has acknowledged 10 strikes on suspected drug smuggling boats from South America, which have killed 43 people. There was another strike on another boat yesterday. I believe that was the 10th strike. Not what I talked about yesterday in my video update, another one. And from the video, it's another speedboat, but this one's just sitting still. And the Department of War, Pete Hegseth, they blew apart that speedboat and they killed more people on that speedboat who they claim are smuggling drugs. But we're also getting reports that Pete Hegseth is deploying troops to Trinidad and Tobago for military exercises very close to Venezuela. So they're starting up the military exercises. Trump is talking about a land operation. They've pretty much shut down the sea. Rubio is pushing for the regime change. Congress is all in. looks like we are heading towards a smash. And I believe a lot of these military assets, if I'm not mistaken, that have now been being deployed to Venezuela, were in the Middle East. I believe the Ford was in the carry group was in the Middle East, or was heading towards the Middle East, but it's now heading towards Venezuela. I could be wrong about that, but I think I read it somewhere. Anyway, that is the situation, everybody, in Venezuela. And Trump administration, they also placed sanctions on the president of Colombia, Gustavo Petro, and his entire family and some of his administration. They now are sanctioned. And the reason they're sanctioned is because the Trump administration believes that they are enabling drug cartels. And Petro has denied this. If he had any assets in the United States, they would all be confiscated and frozen. He says he has no assets in the U.S. He has nothing in the United States. So Petro says he's fine, but from that side of things, he's fine. But he's now been targeted for destruction by the United States. He is now sanctioned. His wife is sanctioned. His son, from what I read, is sanctioned. People in his administration are sanctioned. Sanctions, 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 sanctions. Weaponization, the sanctions weaponization, the tariff weaponization. I wonder when the world will finally just get sick and tired of the weaponization of sanctions. When will we reach that point where we have more countries, entities, organizations, people sanctioned than are not sanctioned, and then they just all gang up, they all get together to say, you know what, we're just all ignoring the sanctions. I wonder when we're going to get to that point. We must be pretty close, to be quite honest, because it just seems like the collective West, the United States, the EU, they're just sanctioning everybody, man. Or they're tariffing everybody. So it's one or the other. It's going to do a lot of damage to United States, the U.S. dollar, collective West financial system. All of this is going to do a lot of damage in the medium to long run. Maybe now in the short term, it serves a certain aim, a certain goal, regime change in Venezuela, regime change in Colombia, whatever, trying to bring down Putin, the Russian shadow fleet, Russian oil, Iran. Short term, they probably feel that it's worth it, but medium to long term, it's going to really damage the United States. Anyway, let's do a clown world and we can wrap this video up. And we go to Germany for today's clown world, where the foreign minister of Germany, Mr. Wonderful, Van der Paul, he wanted to go to China and meet with Chinese officials and talk trade and all of these things with China, which, you know, Merz, since he's been chancellor for how long now, 6 months or 8 months, he has not gone to China. He's not had a meeting with Xi Jinping. And China's a huge trade partner of Germany. Actually, I think China is the number one trade partner with Germany, right? So Germany is very dependent on China, and Merz has not met with Xi Jinping. At least that's my understanding of things. He's not traveled to China. So the foreign minister was going to go to China, and you know what happened? China did not want to see him. They did not want to meet with him. This is the title from Bild. Nobody wants to meet Van der Paul in China. Germany's foreign minister, Van der Paul of the CDU, cancels trip to China as nobody wants to meet him. China's tough, man. China is tough. They play hardball, man. China plays freaking hardball. No doubt about it. Xi Jinping plays hardball. Russia takes a different approach. But China, man, when you get on their bad side, that's it. That's it. You're going down. Anyway, that is the news there. Very embarrassing for the foreign minister of Germany. Very, very embarrassing. You plan a trip to China and they don't want to see you. They don't want to see you. They don't want to meet with you. And so there's another clown world that I want to discuss on a lighter note. The robbery at the Louvre. There was a company in Germany that decided to market off of the robbery at the Louvre. And this was sent to me by, brought to my attention by the great Robert Barnes. And I saw it on X and I was like, no way is that real. And you know what? This is real. This is real. This is a real advertisement, a real post. And it's a company in Germany called Bacher. Okay, Bacher. And they're advertising the ladder, the lift that that you use to get to high floors, right? And they're saying that when you need to, when you're in a hurry and you need to get up high, well, call on this company, right? Use this company's product. That's hilarious, man. That is hilarious. In German and in English, this advertisement. And there are a lot of people that are wondering, is this real? No way did this company market on the Louvre robbery. How could they market and promote their ladders, their equipment, from this heist, this jewelry heist? How could they do such a thing? Well, they did it. It's real. This is a real advertisement, as verified by the New York Times. Plotting a heist. This German company wants to give you a lift. The brazen daylight robbery of the Louvre on Sunday has turned into a marketing opportunity for Bacher, a German maker of cranes and elevators whose product was used in the heist. Their product was actually used in the heist. Oh my God, I didn't know that. So their product was used by the robbers to get to the second floor and get the jewelry. And what this company did is they said, you know what? This is actually a marketing opportunity for us. 7 minutes, right? 7 minutes is all the robbers needed using our elevators and ladders. So they're taking advantage of it. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Anyway, that's the video, everybody. TheDuran.locals.com. We're on X, we're on Rumble, we're on Telegram. We are also on Substack as well. So join us on Substack. Like the video, subscribe to this channel. I forgot to say like and subscribe in the beginning. Of course, nothing new there. But give this video a like, subscribe as well if you want to this channel. And I will see everybody tomorrow. Take care.